Good morning. It is 7:16. We're 53 degrees with cloudy, overcast skies. And we have online with us this morning our state representative from District 39, Ms. Jenny Shaver. Good morning, Jenny. It sure is good to have you with us. We appreciate you getting up early and coming in and being with us.
Well, I'm always happy to talk with you and let the folks know what's been going on in Montgomery.
And speaking of what's going on down there, you folks have wound down your session. You've ended it up.
We did. We wrapped it up on Thursday after a 15-hour day, and we had a lot of long days this time. Our session was very fast-paced and kind of compacted. We were in session 3 days a week instead of two. We normally have two session days and one day devoted just to committee meetings, but we were going into session in the afternoons after committees and working and burning the midnight oil and trying to get back home to our district. So it was a very fast-paced session, but I think it was a good one. We passed a lot of good legislation, and you don't hear about the good things sometimes, but you always like to let folks know about the good things that happen. So I appreciate you letting me call in and keep the folks up to date.
We're honored that you take time to do that. And we noticed that last day or the last part of the session there last week that I think you've got to introduce a bill. You introduced some legislation about adoptions. You want to talk about that?
Yes, sir. I had two bills passed on the final day. I was very busy. I was actually working four bills, but I was running up and down in the stairwell between the House and the Senate trying to keep things on track. And as you know, I'm very vocal about my pro-life stance, and that includes promoting adoption. And we have over 6,000 children in our foster care system and only about 2,300 foster parents. And the average number of days our children spend in foster care is over 600. And so I want to, our adoption numbers are falling. And over the past 2 years, in 2020, we had over 800 adoptions. Then in 2021, just 700 about. And so, you know, our numbers are falling. And I want to encourage adoption and help those who are trying to adopt and provide a permanent home for our children that are at risk. And so this tax credit would double to, first of all, we have one for $1,000 that's just for children in Alabama, but this increases it to two, but it makes a $1,000 credit for any adoption, whether it's foreign, out of state, or whatever. But then it increases it to $2,000 for a child that's a resident of Alabama. So I was very thrilled,
Jenny,
to get that bill passed.
Is that a one-time tax credit or is that
it's
ongoing?
It's a one-time.
Okay.
It's a one-time, you know, for that child, you know, for the year that the adoption is final.
Okay.
It's a $2,000 tax credit.
All right. Now, you said you had another bill passed. You want to tell us about that?
I did, and this one was sort of a miracle because it came in late. We, as people know, most recently we lost a deputy who was also a firefighter, Keith Morgan, and he passed from COVID, which he contracted in the line of duty. And there are benefits for public safety officers who die in the line of duty, and on the federal side, they recognized COVID that was contracted in the line of duty as a reason to collect the benefits, but Alabama did not. And so when Josh Summerford, Jeff's chief deputy, was trying to help the family apply for these benefits, we found that out, that COVID was not a line of duty cause of death for first responders. So quickly we got a bill drafted and did our best to rush it through, and we managed to do it. It takes a minimum of 5 working days to get a bill passed. Now, I think at the time that I found out, we only had 6 left. So we managed to get that one through. It was very important to these families who've lost, you know, first responders that's lost you know, their loved one due to COVID contracted on the line of duty. Because, you know, they had to, the first responders didn't get sent home.
Right.
They were still showing up. They had to show up. They were essential. And so I was very happy to be able to help these families.
First responders, whether it be law enforcement or fire, EMS officials, or any other first responder,
rescue squad,
mm-hmm. they couldn't perform their duties from home.
That's right. They couldn't phone it in.
No, they couldn't do that, you know, or couldn't do it online, except for the report. That's all.
That's right. They still had to show up in person to help the folks out and risk their life, and that's what they do every day.
Absolutely. You know? Well, will that be retroactive, or will it just be from the passage forward?
You're correct. It's retroactive from March 13th of 2020, and it extends through for deaths through the end of this year. And, you know, we're coming out of the pandemic, it looks like. We've got our fingers crossed and hoping. And so if something happens beyond that, you know, we may have to extend it, but hopefully we won't have to do that.
Absolutely.
But, yes, it's retroactive.
Well, was the governor happy with the legislature's performance during this session?
Well, I didn't hear any complaints from her. So I hope so. She's been signing our bills, so making them into law. So I think we had a good session across the board.
That means that if she didn't give you any flack about it and she signed those bills, that means she was agreeable with them.
Well, we actually had one day left on the calendar where we could have held it out through April 24th. So if we thought there was any risk of her not signing something that we wanted to override a veto, there was time to do that, but we felt confident that she was going to be agreeable to what we wanted in the past. So we went ahead and went sine die on Thursday night.
Okay. And being in Montgomery there in your term there, if the governor doesn't veto any bills, that means that she's pretty much in step with the legislature. Am I right?
Well, you know, I know she has her goals just like each lawmaker has theirs. You know, we all have things we want to see done. So, you know, we do work together very well, I think.
Good team.
There, so.
Good team effort. How about some
of
that?
That's what it is.
So any other bills that stand out in your mind that you were proud to see pass this session?
Well, I'm happy to report that the money situation for the state continues to be good, and it's always worrisome whenever the economy is not doing well. We expect at some point that to be reflected in our state revenues, but right now we're still doing good. We just can't overextend ourselves during good times. I think it's a little bit harder to budget sometimes when things are going well than when you're broke, because, you know, when you're broke, if you don't have it, you can't spend it. We have, you know, a balanced budget requirement in the state, and actually passing the two budgets is the one constitutional requirement of the legislature. But we did have, good revenues continue to flow in. And so what we've done is to give that back to the taxpayers by cutting some taxes. And so hopefully in the areas where we have cut taxes, that somebody will fall into one of those categories. We've cut taxes for families. The child tax credits that came in from the federal government were going to be taxable to Alabama, but we made them non-taxable, and that saves a family of two children over $200. For retirees, we've exempted the first $6,000 of their taxable retirement income from state tax. For businesses, proactively, we replenished the unemployment trust fund, which was depleted during the pandemic, and so employer taxes were going to greatly increase if that fund did not have enough reserve in it. So we put $79 million in that. That's a proactive tax cut for businesses. We also exempted many small businesses from the minimum business privilege tax. It was costing businesses more money just to file the forms than what they were going to owe, so we just eliminated that. We exempted property tax for business property, the first $40,000 of the market value of business property. So, you know, for families, retirees, and businesses, you know, there's, I think that totaled up about $160 million in tax cuts back to the people. So I think that's a good thing.
Anytime you can give it back to the taxpayers in forms of tax cuts and things of that nature, tax credits, whatever, it amounts to the same. People keep more of their hard-earned money in their pockets.
That's exactly right.
And it also gives businesses an opportunity or an incentive maybe to expand here and there, seeing that they're not going to get have a bigger tax bill coming in.
That's correct. Decreasing the tax burden for businesses helps them to be able to expand and grow, and that's good for everybody.
Sounds
so
like
I'm very happy to do that.
Absolutely. Sounds like an active session and a very productive one. Go ahead, Jenny.
Well, as I mentioned, you know, our primary responsibility is to pass the budgets, and we have two budgets, the Education Trust Fund, which and both of them were at record highs. The Education Trust Fund was at $8.3 billion this year, and that is just for education only. And then the general fund was $2.74 billion, and that's for everything that the state does besides education. And so we gave increases to mental health, $36 million increase for new crisis centers. We increased the budgets for our district attorneys, Department of Corrections, ALEA, law enforcement, pardons and paroles. All state employees got a 4% raise, and the retirees, state retirees, are getting a bonus. And in the Education Trust Fund, you know, we're trying to focus on the basics for education. We have a state department of education that's a state board of education that's responsible for education policy. But in the legislature, we try to influence that by funding programs that and try to get back to the basics. We had the Literacy Act to focus on reading, and now we have the Numeracy Act that we passed to focus on math proficiency. And so we funded those programs, you know, getting back to the basics, trying to increase our children's proficiency in reading and math and also science. So we were able to increase the amount that teachers get in the classroom. Currently, they get $700 per classroom for materials and supplies, and we've increased that to $900. The programs I mentioned... Also, pre-K, we did an increase of $23 million for pre-K. We're focusing on workforce development, you know, like our tech schools. We've did a $25 million increase for workforce development. You know, we're having a hard time recruiting and keeping teachers. Our starting pay in Alabama for teachers is pretty good, but it doesn't keep pace with states around us, and so we have a hard time retaining our good teachers. And so we did a 4% pay raise for those who have worked less than 9 years, but on a scale of for teachers who have taught more than 9 years, they'll be getting a 5 to a 21% increase in salary. Also, we did a retired teacher's bonus. So, you know, that's been our focus on education, you know, funding the basics, trying to improve our proficiency, and trying to recruit and retain our teachers.
As we used to say, years gone by in education, it was reading, writing, and arithmetic, and now you've added science.
Well, yes, sir. It's so important today. And also important today, you know, the thing that we need the most is a utility, just like electricity and water, is we need broadband. We need to expand our access to broadband, especially in our rural areas. It's been just like trying to expand electricity back in the day, and we had our, you know, our co-ops to do that in our rural areas that were heavily helped by the government for companies to come in and provide it for us at a competitive cost. And so we're doing the same thing with rural broadband. In the rescue money, we already allocated $243 million out of the first tranche. The feds have set aside $950 million for rural broadband expansion. So, you know, we're going to be fighting for more of those dollars to help fund rural broadband. We also passed some things to help called the middle mile and last mile to help give access to areas like ours. So it's going to take a lot of time. You know, things, infrastructure like that isn't built overnight, but we're working on it to get it all over the state as fast as we can.
Broadband in rural areas.
Those are the highlights.
That's great. Well, broadband in rural areas is a must, and that'll help.
It is.
It'll help farmers. It'll help businesses that want to locate in a rural area and do a better job for their clients and help them be more profitable. So it's a must, and it's a necessity, and we'll be glad to see it throughout the entire state.
Yes, sir, and we talked about it before when I called in about the permitless carry, but if anybody missed that, you know, currently to carry a concealed weapon, someone has to get a permit from the sheriff first, and this changes that. Permits will still be available. Some states still require them. I mean, I'm the sheriff's wife. I'm always going to get one because I travel. And I want to be able to show, you know, that I'm legally carrying my firearm. But ALEA is creating a database of persons who are prohibited from carrying. And so officers will then, like if they stop someone, they can ask, you know, and people must declare if they have a weapon if they're asked by a law enforcement officer. And then he can check that database just like they do checking for outstanding warrants and things like that. So that's going to be the procedure instead of you having to get a permit to show that you're okay. There will be a prohibited persons list of those who are not, allowed to conceal carry. But go ahead. Did you have a question?
What I was going to say is let's cover the benefit, the reason for having it, because a lot of people say, well, if I don't have to have a permit, why should I buy one? And there are benefits to buy one and to have a permit, whether you have to purchase it or not. You want to go over that?
Yes. You know, like I said, you know, if you travel to a state that requires a permit, then, you know, you're still going to need one to show. So now, I know Jeff uses the money that he gets off the permits to fund the school resource officers. And, you know, there's a concern that, you know, that loss of revenue would hurt those programs and things that the sheriff spend that money on. But we also funded a grant program where they can go, if they do lose revenue, that they can apply for that lost revenue so that they can keep on funding the necessary law enforcement activities that they were using to fund that, you know, with that money. But now people need to bear in mind this does not go into effect until January 1st of next year. So you still have to have a permit through the end of this year, just as it currently stands. And there's still prohibitions about carrying at schools and athletic events and secure spaces like courthouses, government buildings, and, you know, business and property owners and business owners can still decide whether they want to allow firearms on their property or not. That remains.
Those prohibitions that were existent are still in effect. And so people,
yes, that's
can't
correct.
They just can't carry anywhere that they.
That's correct.
Okay. Right. Limitations out there. But be sure if you're traveling, you want to know what your state that you're traveling into, what their laws are. And if they require a permit in their state, they'll require you to have one to carry your weapon into their state. Is that right, Miss Jenny?
Yes, some states recognize ours. You know, some don't. you know, some states do not recognize and reciprocate permits, but most states do.
And
recognize our permit.
Anything else you want to touch on before we go? I know we've talked about a variety of everything, a lot of things, but maybe you want to update us real quick, and then we'll let you go about the 411 project. Is it still coming along nicely?
It is. It is, and they're telling me that we're about to see a heavy increase in activity there as the spring progresses, and that things are really going to pick up speed. They're on track. You know, they're still on track on the calendar and on the budget. So it's exciting to me. I just get real happy every time I drive by and see that highway being built out there. It just makes my day.
A lot of us feel the same way, and we want to thank you for your input and your part there in the fall that you do for our district in Northeast Alabama, and not only our district, but the state of Alabama.
And, of course, County Road 70, we're happy about that, too.
Absolutely.
Getting the road up to the Rock Village, that's huge, too.
That's a big plus for our area as well, and we're thankful for you for getting that done through the governor's office.
Yes, sir. The governor's been good to our district. She really has.
She has. Jenny, thank you so very much for being with us. Hope we've not left anything out. And you know you're welcome to be back with us to keep us updated on changes and things that are going on with the state legislature anytime.
Anytime, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jenny Shaver with District 39, our state representative for Northeast Alabama.